Good morning. The Federal Election Commission open meeting for Wednesday, April 30th, 2025 will come to order. We have a pretty busy agenda today with some advisory opinions and a couple of legal issues that we have to deal with. And so we'll get started right away. The chair calls draft advisory opinion 2025-05 politicalmeetings.com.
Thank you,
Mr. Yes. Hang on just one second. Ms. Rose? Okay, great. Thank you. I'm going to have counsel make a presentation and then you can have comments after we get that. So, okay, counsel, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Acting Chairman. Apologies for that since I can't see what's in the room. Good morning, commissioners. Agenda document 2509A is a draft response to an advisory opinion request submitted by politicalmeetings.com. The requester is a single member LLC that operates a web platform designed to provide the public with information about candidates and national party committees and meetings held by them. Two paid subscription tiers will provide users with additional benefits, including the ability to make monthly contributions to candidates and national party committees at the highest tier. Two profile tiers for candidates will also provide additional services to the candidates, including the highest tier's ability to receive contributions from users. The requester asks whether the proposed business model is permissible under the Act and Commission regulations. The draft concludes that the proposed activity is permissible and that it will not result in contributions from politicalmeetings.com or its sole member to candidates or to national party committees. We did not receive any comments on the request or on the draft. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you, counsel. Commissioners, any questions for counsel? No. Ms. Rose, welcome this morning. I just have kind of one question for you generally. Would you just tell me a little bit about your business and what it is that you propose to do here and the question that you've asked? Yeah, we'll have to get it turned on there.
Okay, thank you. I thought it sounded quiet. Thank you so much. And I do want to quickly say that I appreciate the time that the attorneys with the FEC has spent with me. They have been diligent and patient with me, and that has been just wonderful, a wonderful experience on my end. And thank you for having me before this commission board today. So I've been working on this really since about 2019. And had tried to come think of various ways to make this work. And what I wanted to do, my whole focus is so that the public in its entirety, no matter who you are, would have the ability to locate meetings on the local level, state, and to also understand more about candidates and be totally nonpartisan so that we will have right now, we're focusing on the Democratic, Republican, Libertarian, and Green parties. And so we want to give all parties an equal platform, and we want all the people to be able to locate meetings locally. And so we go by population, and sometimes it can vary, but always the top three largest counties in every state. And so, for example, we should have sheriffs and mayors, candidates for commission chair, commissioners, city council, and then you would have your state, you know, state representatives, state senators, and then obviously we're excluding the role of president. You know, we're not going to get into that. But then we want to make it so that these meetings are more attended, more properly attended, with more opportunity to have full rooms, and then also give people the information they need to learn more about politics in general.
Very good. Thank you. Commissioners, any questions, comments? Do we have any motions with regard to the advisory? Mm-hmm. Commissioner Broussard.
Thank you. My motion is an advisory opinion 2025-05. I move approval of agenda document number 25-09A.
Very good. Thank you, commissioners. You've heard the motion of Commissioner Broussard. Is there any discussion of the motion? There being none, I'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Ms. Rose.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Up next, the chair calls draft advisory opinion 25-07, Libertarian Party of Maryland, Libertarian Party of Maine, Libertarian Party of Ohio, and Libertarian Party of Vermont. And we have Mr. Holloway appearing on behalf of the requesters, and I'll recognize counsel for presentation on the advisory team.
Thank you, Acting Chairman Traynor, and good morning, Commissioners. Agenda document 25-08-A contains a draft response to an advisory opinion request by the Libertarian Party of Idaho, the Libertarian Party of Maine Incorporated, the Libertarian Party of Maryland, and the Libertarian Party of Vermont. The requesters ask if they qualify as state committees of a political party within the meaning of the Act and Commission regulations. The draft concludes that under the facts presented in the request, the requesters do qualify as state committees of a political party within the meaning of the Act and the Commission regulations because, first, the Libertarian Party is a political party. Second, the requesters are each part of the Libertarian Party's official party structure. And third, the requesters are each responsible for the day-to-day operation of the Libertarian Party at the state level in their respective states. The commission received no comments on the request or on the draft. Thank you.
Great. Commissioners, you've heard the presentation. Any questions of our council? Commissioner Broussard.
Thank you, Mr. Acting Chairman. Mr. Holloway, one, I just want to say welcome back. It's always pleasant when we see you.
Thank you.
In the building. I'm sure that you've had an opportunity to review the draft that we put forward. I just wanted to offer you the chance if you had any comments that you wanted to make in the cards.
No comments.
Great.
Thank you.
We like it that way.
Yes. Just so does my clients.
I do have one question for you, Mr. Holloway. So to get four state Libertarian parties to all join the same document, I think is a major achievement, given the nature of the Libertarian Party, who I've done work for in the past in a different life. So congratulations on getting everybody under the same roof to come and make the request. So.
Well, that's what the Holloway Law Office specializes in.
It is great to see you back.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be back. It's good to see everyone.
Commissioners, any further comments or questions? The chair will entertain motion.
I move to approve OGC's recommendation.
Very good. You've heard Commissioner Lindenbaum's.
I'm sorry. Give me a second. I was reading the wrong. I was going to. I don't usually do motions. I'll do it. I got it now. In advisory opinion 2025-07, I move the approval of agenda document number 25-08-A, which is draft A.
Thank you. Commissioners, you've heard the motion of Commissioner Lindenbaum to approve the draft advisory opinion. Is there any discussion of the motion? There being none, we'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. If you want to oppose, the motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Council, and thank you. Up next, the chair calls request for Commission Directive 69 guidance, LRA 1219, in a memorandum to the Commission dated April 8, 2025. And we'll recognize that.
Good morning, Commissioner. We are here for commission consideration of a joint OGC Office of Compliance recommendation that arose from a reports analysis division query concerning the permissibility of a committee's remediation of impermissible general election contributions. The committee received general election contributions that it was required to refund after losing the primary election. The committee reported successfully refunding the majority of the contributions and removing the remaining balance in uncashed refund checks by donating that amount to a charitable organization. We jointly recommend that the commission conclude that the committee's disbursement to charity of unrefunded general election contributions was not permissible. We're happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Commissioners, you've heard the presentation. Are there any questions or comments? Mr. Dickerson.
Thank you, sir. The nice thing about court is that the judges tell you which side's going to go first, so you kind of get a little bit of guidance on that. But they also, another thing about court is that there's a burden of persuasion. So let me, I guess, ask, well, let me frame the question. This is tricky because it runs into two larger issues that the commission has struggled with for some years. The first is sort of the role, the interpretive role of advisory opinions, and, you know, the extent to which an advisory opinion adopted by four commissioners is an interpretation of law upon which liability may be predicated, as opposed to an interpretation of law that serves to guide private behavior, lead to voluntary compliance, and immunize against enforcement action. So that's one issue, I think, in the background. There's an advisory opinion. I think that's the source of law OGC is relying on. So I guess that's my first question. It's like, what is the source of law for the concept that this is unlawful? And to further frame the question, the other big issue in the background is that, you know, it's a pretty fundamental rule of American jurisprudence that unless there is a rule of law that prohibits action, then that action is permitted. We don't live in a, we fought a revolution over licensing regimes. So with that framing, it would help me if someone could point me to specifically what source of law justifies the legal position.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The law specifically on point here is at 11 CFR 102.9E, and it is in E, I believe it's 3. Forgive me if I don't have my reg book in front of me, so if I have the sub paragraph wrong. The regulation states that if a candidate is not a candidate in the general election, any contributions made for the general election shall be refunded to the contributors. There are some other regulatory provisions as well. 103.3B requires prohibits the committee from disbursing funds that were impermissibly received, which 102.9E defines as the funds that were received for a general election prior to the primary election that a candidate loses.
Chairman.
Richard.
Well, let's start there because that's very helpful. Because of course, regulation is a source of law. With you so far. I don't think there's any dispute that money received for the general election, that in cases where the candidate is not advanced to the general election, cannot be retained. I agree with that. And the regulation says must be returned. I don't think there's any disagreement on that either. The question here is what happens if you attempt to return the money and you cannot. I mean, let me put it a little sharper. The regulation does not say, and in the event the money cannot be returned, it must be given to the United States. You know, this regulation does not specifically privilege the United States as the recipient of money that cannot otherwise be refunded. So what's the legal authority for the idea that I've received money, I've tried to give it back to contributors, I can't for whatever reason, I have to get rid of it? What's the legal theory for why, no, now it belongs to the United States government as opposed to anybody else?
The commission has not addressed that in its regulations. And this Directive 69 memo does not reach that question, just as a preliminary matter. It only reaches the question of whether the disbursement to the charitable organization was permissible, concluding that it was not under those regs that I cited earlier. As for the next question that you're asking, again, which is not addressed in this Directive 69 recommendation, you're correct that it's not in the statute or the reg as to what must be done or what may be done. The commission has interpreted those provisions that I just mentioned, as well as some additional ones, to conclude that, to make a recommendation that we're not addressing here about disgorgement to the Treasury, And beyond saying that, I think that the commission's interpretations, official interpretations of its laws and advisory opinions do bind the commission until changed. To the extent that they are relevant, but we're not addressing that here. And I don't want to go beyond that as to the basis of on the fly in a public
Chairman.
Meeting.
Commissioner Dixon. But I mean, isn't that almost worse? Like in the sense that, okay, if everyone agrees that you can't keep the money, and the guidance from the Office of General Counsel is, oh no, we're not taking a position on where you have to spend the money or send the money. You just can't send it there. I mean, that strikes me as a very challenging rule for the committee to attempt to abide by. I mean, don't we have an obligation? Everyone agrees that there's a source of law that says you can't keep the money. That's uncontroverted. So don't we have an obligation to tell them where to spend, where they may send the money? And if so, why? Basically, how is this guidance helpful if that's all it does? And kind of to put a further point on it, I mean, what would OGC's position be if a committee received money for the general election, lost the primary? Let's say it was $1,000, just round number. Couldn't return the money, attempted to, in line with their responsibility under the regulation, which I agree with you on. And they said, you know what, I don't want to write out a check to the United States. And I have been told I can't give this to charity. So it seems to me my only available option is to withdraw $1,000 in small bills and set fire to it as an act of protest in front of the IRS headquarters. Would that be appropriate?
I want to answer your question with, I want to preface my answer to your question with the context in which this question has arisen. It is not a question from the committee. It is guidance from staff to staff, and now at this point from the commission to staff, not from the commission to the committee. The committee was offered in this instance the opportunity, as all committees are, to submit a request for the commission's legal consideration directly from the committee to the commission, and declined to do so.
They were advised of that?
Yes, of course. And so where we are right now is staff level considerations, and staff generally, we follow the law and the interpretations of the law approved by four commissioners in how we approach our work. At this point, we do have a valid advisory opinion, and normally we would follow that because it is not for staff to not follow it. It's for the commission to make changes as to its interpretations, not for staff to second guess that. With that said, because this is a staff to, what it originated as a staff to staff guidance, and it is now commissioner to staff guidance, we're looking at the next step in this particular matter, which doesn't reach your hypothetical. I apologize if that's not a satisfactory answer, but I hope that context explains why the answer is we don't know what we would tell such a committee because that is not presented here.
Can I just make one, Mr. Chairman? I respect all that. I don't even disagree with most of it. My only point is the commission created this process to consider these matters as an exercise of judgment to try to get ahead of these sort of contested legal questions. Like what we're trying to avoid as a matter of good government is a situation where these things circulate quietly inside the building, sometimes for years until, years or even decades later, the first case finally pops up in an enforcement context. And we're scrambling to unwind the clock. And a lot of effort has been spent by the Office of General Counsel, by RAD, by attorneys and parties on the outside, fumbling in the dark on some pretty obvious counter hypotheticals because we haven't done our job clarifying the law and explaining what the rule is. So I hear what you're saying, but the reason we have this procedure and the reason we're having this conversation is that the commission now owns this legal question. And as a result, your very careful response notwithstanding, I would like advice and counsel on how we exercise that responsibility to give clarity.
Okay. Commissioner Lindenbaum.
I want to thank my colleagues for bringing this issue kind of to the forefront. And this is a kind of different posture we're in here by reviewing this directive. Reviewing this legal issue here that wasn't a direct question from the committee. So I do want to say that this is a difficult legal issue. It's how should a committee be allowed to dispose of uncashed refunds, which are by definition impermissible funds in a campaign account? They can certainly collect them, but then they can't use them. AO 2003-18 answered that question by stating disgorgement to the US Treasury, and that AO is still good law. Well, I think my colleagues make excellent points on the merits of why AO 2003-18 should be revisited. Perhaps it will be in the future. There are also very strong policy arguments against permitting the donation of impermissible funds to charities. Reasons that I don't think this is the appropriate venue to get into. I think instead the appropriate venue would be if we are dealing with regulations or if we're dealing with an advisory opinion. So at bottom, I'm not prepared here to overrule AO 2003-18 by a vote on internal legal guidance issued pursuant to Directive 69, and especially without any notice and comment.
Commissioner Broussard.
Thank you. I want to join in the comments that Commissioner Lindenbaum has made, but I want to take the caution that OGC has given us is that it's premature for us to be at any of those stages. And I also want to say to everyone, this is not, in my opinion, the process that we use if we are seeking to supersede an AO. What you answered is the question that was presented. It's a premature state, and any discussion or request could very well be done by counsel representing that organization to go back to the agency to ask that. But as has been reiterated by my colleague, 2003-18 is good, but that's not the question that's even before, as Ms. Selenkoff has shared with us. So any further, I think, puts us in a status where we're not going to be able to proceed at an open meeting, and I would question whether we need to move to a closed session at that time. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Selenkoff, is it ever considered that the laws regarding a sheet property in the states were considered as a mechanism for we have the discussion of disgorgement for the Treasury, but those funds are actually the property of an individual. And as Mr. Dickerson pointed out, there's really no mechanism by which it goes to the U.S. Treasury, at least in a statutory mechanism. So why would we not ever advise that they use the rules and the laws with regard to the sheet property within the state?
Mr. Chairman, the commission does look to state law in different contexts. I would have to look more closely at this. I do know that when it comes to disgorgement and sometimes even charitable donations and it varies. Sometimes it's impermissible funds, sometimes it's residual funds, that is funds permissibly received, mm-hmm. but remaining after a candidate is no longer a candidate. The commission has taken different positions. Sometimes when the true contributor is not known, because let's say there's a contribution in the name of another indictment brought, or when the true contributor is not, it varies. I guess the answer is that it can vary, and the commission has taken different approaches, including in some instances to state and or local entities. As far as the state law underlying that, I'm not sure. And I don't, to follow, none of those other advisor opinions I've discussed apply in the circumstances of the facts that we've seen, that we have in with this particular committee, I will say that. But in other contexts.
Commissioners, any further questions in the session?
Sure. No further questions, just for my colleagues. I understand there's an advisory opinion. That advisory opinion conceded that there was no on-point law, as everyone has done today. It argued by analogy to regulations, some of which have subsequently been withdrawn because the underlying statute was declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court of the United States. I think we're engaging in a pretty impressive level of formalism in claiming that we are not reaching this point about whether or not it has to be disclosed or disgorged to the United States. While I read this piece of paper. It absolutely says that the position is that it has to be disgorged to the United States. There is no legal basis for that position under the Act or under the regulations. Again, I understand why counsel is bound by the advisory opinion and why the position has been taken that was taken today. I also think this conversation shows that it is not fit for purpose in giving guidance to the regulated community, and that we are in very significant risk of imposing a rule that lacks any basis in law. An advisory opinion is not a source of law. You go to district court and say, hey, I've got this advisory opinion that said X, and you can't point to a statute, and you can't point to a regulation, and you can't point to a judicial opinion. Good luck. In my view, it would be best if the commission used the process it created and made clear that this is a permissible use. I understand my colleagues, for various procedural reasons, are unable to do that. The vehicle will come, and it will be more expensive than the one present today.
Thank you. Commissioners, anything further? Any motion? All right. In LRA 1218, I move that the commission reject the recommendation of the Office of General Counsel. Commissioners, any discussion? There being none, I'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed?
No. No.
The motion fails with myself and Commissioner Dickerson voting in favor, Commissioner Broussard and Commissioner Lindenbaum.
Mr. Chairman, in the motion you had said LRA 1218.
I'm sorry, 1219. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you for that. Commissioner Lindenbaum.
Thank you. I move approval of OGC's recommendations.
Thank you. Commissioners, you've heard the motion from Commissioner Lindenbaum to approve OGC's recommendations. Is there any discussion of the motion?
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Dickerson.
What's the recommendation?
Did the commission conclude that the committee's disbursement to the charitable organization and unrefunded general election contributions was not permissible?
Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioners, you've heard the motion. Any further discussion? There being none, I'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
No. The motion fails with Commissioner Lindenbaum, Commissioner Broussard voting in favor, and myself and Commissioner Dickerson opposed. Commissioners, anything further?
Mr. Chairman,
Richard,
I would just encourage the Office of General Counsel to give some serious thought to the merits of this. You've heard merits discussion at the table. I don't think it's hard to predict where this would end in a different procedural context.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. The chair now calls up a memorandum from myself and Commissioner Dickerson regarding the Office of General Counsel recommendations at the initial stages of the enforcement process pursuant to 52 U.S.C. 30109A. And the chair will recognize Commissioner Dickerson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Briefly, this is part of a longstanding series of efforts across party lines, despite the cover memorandum, to future-proof the commission against against two trends that, in at least my judgment, pose a significant risk to the commission's viability and continued functioning. On one hand, the fact that the commission's resources are severely constrained, and despite unanimous and consistent recommendations to the Congress remain constrained, which requires us to make some extremely difficult decisions about prioritization, on one hand, and on the other hand, the fact that in a gambit which I have loudly disagreed with, the commission is now subject to very significant litigation risk under the statute, so-called A8 procedure. Reading these two trends together raises a problem, namely that those who file complaints with this agency have a right of action under the statute after 120 days of inaction to sue the commission for that inaction. This has happened. When it has happened, the courts have looked at the totality of the circumstances and the reasonableness of the commission's delay. I put this on the agenda for one reason. I think it is very important that the commission get ahead of this problem. And in particular, that the commission be prepared to explain to courts in a regular manner, with a regular document kept in the ordinary course of business, that due to our resource constraints and the demands on the Office of General Counsel's time, there will in many cases be extraordinary difficulties or even impossibility in acting within 120 days. That is a fact. It is downstream from resource decisions made by the Congress. And it is our duty under the statute, as I read it, to develop the record, to be forthright with the courts when that happens. So this was my best effort. I've discussed it with all of my colleagues. Work from all of my colleagues is reflected on this draft, regardless of what happens today. I think it is a very low cost way of getting ahead of a very expensive problem, and I hope that it will be adopted. Thank you.
Commissioner Lindebaum.
Thank you. This is a speechifying day, so apologies ahead of time. I do share my colleagues' concerns about A8 lawsuits, and that final general counsel reports can take long to circulate. However, I absolutely want to acknowledge the significant progress our staff has made in recent months towards improving the timeliness. We have pursued multiple solutions to address this issue, and by this issue, I really mean the A8 issue and our time. We've asked Congress for additional funding to increase staff capacity, and I should say that 10 years of a flat budget for us to actually make that ask. And we started making the ask, we received the money, but then recently we have not been receiving the funds that we need to function. And therefore our salaries, but also our staff has been frozen for far longer than the current freeze has been in existence. We have also proposed extending the statutory 120-day deadline to 240 days. In practice, our lawyers rarely have the full 120 days to complete the FGCRs. Time is lost identifying and notifying respondents, and the commission often and rightly grants respondents extensions to file their replies. But the 120-day clock keeps running during all this time. The most direct way to meet the deadline would be to stop granting extensions. But that would come at the cost of fairness and transparency. More complete responses help us make better informed decisions, and they serve the interests of all the parties involved, including the public. Ultimately, we are working within real constraints. So while I am open to all proposals to increase efficiency and will continue to push for our legislative recommendations, I can't support the proposed directive.
Richard Dixon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, of course, agree with everything until the last sentence there. it has been a bipartisan effort to get the resources the commission needs to undertake its statutory duties. I'm going to push back a little bit on the straw man. The actual ask, I am reading here from the directive. If an OGC is unable to prepare a recommendation within 120 days of the receipt of the complaint, and that 120 days is not my idea, that was Congress's idea in the act. I have joined you in saying that it's too short. But there is a law that says that we can be sued at 120 days. So again, quoting, is unable to prepare a recommendation within that 120 days, the general counsel shall promptly provide the commission a written report, which, by the way, could be very short. If, for instance, the reason for the delay is an extension to the respondent. A report setting forth the particular circumstances preventing the timely circulation of the recommendation and an estimated date for when the recommendation will be circulated. It is a very easy ask. And declining to provide that paperwork from enforcement is just shifting the burden to litigation to create it as part of a litigation record on a one-off way with all the downstream effects of litigation strategy objections from opposing counsel. I think writing a paragraph report to the commission documenting why things are a little bit late, which is probably going to turn into a form email if I know anything about this agency, is a much more resource efficient way of dealing with this problem than forcing people to brief it to a federal judge. So again, with all agreement on everything you just said, I think this is a very modest ask, and I'm just going to put a little, like, in a year when we're dealing with this litigation, I hope people remember this if it doesn't pass. And my apologies to the litigators.
If there's any further discussion, the chair will entertain the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With great hope, perhaps misplaced, I move the adoption of agenda document number 25-07-alpha.
Thank you, Commissioner Dickerson. Commissioners, you've heard the motion. Is there any discussion of the motion? There being none, we'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no?
No.
No.
The motion fails with myself and Commissioner Dickerson voting in favor, Commissioner Lindenbaum and Commissioner Bissard opposed. Commissioners, any further action or motions with regard to this agenda item? There being none, the chair will now recall the matter of election of officers, that being the chair. This is a matter that was held over from the meeting of March 27th, 2025. And I'll look for the secretary. I believe that there was a pending motion when we held this, correct?
Yes, sir. Commissioner Dickerson nominated Commissioner Broussard for the chair.
Very good. So we are on the nomination of Commissioner Broussard to serve as the chair, and discussion of that.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'd like to withdraw my motion and resubmit it to move the election of Shauna Broussard as chair of the commission effective upon the 1st of July, 2025.
Very good. I think that's a great idea. As most of the public knows, we've had cuts in staffing, and we have staffing issues and things like that. And I know just for me, having taken over this position as acting chair, it puts a lot of pressure on the staff, and there have been some recent departures and things of that nature. So hopefully that will give Mr. Broussard time to be able to move into the spot and take everything out of my office and move it down to your office. So Commissioner Lindenbaum.
Thank you. I'm going to continue my speechifying now after this matter. I'll only do one more time. So I want to first take a moment to express my deep gratitude to Trey Treanor for everything he's done this year while serving as acting chair. Trey, your leadership has been marked by clarity, commitment, and authenticity. You've been a strong advocate for this agency and for the staff who keep it running every day. You've led with transparency, with humor, and with a genuine engagement that has made it not only easy, but truly enjoyable to work with you. So thank you for your steady hand and your good spirit. I also want to thank Commissioner Broussard for once again stepping up to serve as chair. Quite frankly, it's not fair. This is the second time Commissioner Broussard has had to assume the role of chair without the time to plan her priorities, to shape her vision, or to build the staff support she deserves as our leader. That said, if there is anyone who knows this agency inside and out, it is certainly Commissioner Broussard. And while the circumstances may be less than ideal, I have no doubt that she will lead us with grace, strength, and determination through this, hopefully brief, lack of quorum. And when we are restored to full strength, I know she'll be the one grinding those gears to get us moving again and to tackle whatever backlog may be waiting. We are lucky to have both of you, acting chair Treanor and Commissioner Broussard. I'm not sure how to address you in this very moment since you are not vice chair, since you have never had the opportunity to serve as vice chair. But I am grateful for both of you.
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Dickerson.
Thank you. I had a speech, but Commissioner Lindenbaum's is better, so I'm going to speak off the cuff. I was happy to make the motion. Commissioner Broussard and I came in together in 2020. And we were immediately handed the leadership positions for our caucuses. I had by far the better end of that deal as vice chair, while Commissioner Broussard, of course, was handed the reins of the agency. In a very difficult transitional time coming out of a lack of a quorum and a significant backlog, and gifted with new colleagues who did not know the building in the way that she did, in many cases did not have staff. It was a chaotic time. And I will just say that just speaking personally, because as everyone knows, I don't really like the titles anyway, but being chair of this agency is a thankless job. Done well and done without regard for personal aggrandizement and showmanship. It is an act of stewardship. It is an act of diplomacy. And I have not seen anyone do it better than Shauna Broussard in my time in the bar. Clearing the backlog with new colleagues in 2021 was a great public service. And I take great personal relief in seeing her at the helm of this agency as it moves into a transitional period. And I want to agree with Commissioner Lindenbaum, both on my thanks to Commissioner Traynor for jumping into the breach and for his leadership. You know, those of you who have been longtime observers of this commission can read the temperature of this dais and compare it with previous years. That doesn't just happen. Like that's the result of acts of personal leadership by Commissioner Traynor and Commissioner Broussard over the last months and years. And I'm very grateful for that. I'm very happy to see Commissioner Broussard, who I will attest is a careful lawyer, a hard worker, and deeply committed to the even application of the law. So yes, I look forward to this motion hopefully succeeding and leaving this place in very good hands.
Commissioner Broussard. Well, let me say one thing. So today is the 236th anniversary of the inauguration of George Washington as the first president of the United States, as the father of our country. So hopefully today will be marked as a day that in her second term in office as the chair, we can make Shauna Broussard the mother of the FEC. Commissioner Broussard.
Well, as I've told you before, Commissioner Traynor, that answer will be no. Shauna Broussard is not the mother of the FEC. She is the soon-to-be chair of the agency. But thank you. Nonetheless, I want to join in all the comments that have been said regarding you during this time. It was an unexpected tenure, and you stepped in and you immediately made avail yourself to the two of us to work together to keep things going. I have remarks, I'll read them. I would say I do not like being the person that gets put in the ship when the ship is either rudderless or when the ship has no clear direction. But I am known for being a person that will give it direction, and I would do so. So let me read the remarks, because all this niceness will just eventually overwhelm me. As many of you already know, this agency has recently undergone a significant leadership transition. But let me be clear, our focus must remain on the mission of the FEC. To protect the integrity of the federal campaign process by providing transparency and fairly enforcing and administering federal campaign finance laws. Do not take for granted that I'm reading this to you. It is something that all of us should be familiar with at work in this building. This agency is not about one individual. It's about all 276 people in this agency that work together in pursuit of a shared purpose. Our responsibility to the public and to each other remains unchanged. I will take on this role with a sense of duty. And in the near future, probably July 1st, as has been indicated, I will present an agenda for the rest of the year. But for now, we must commit to our mission and move forward with resolve. So at the appropriate time, I will be voting to approve myself as the chair, which is quite unusual. I will say to be voting for yourself and feels quite uncomfortable, I must admit.
Commissioner Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Dickerson.
No, I appreciate that. I abstained on my own chair vote. It's another burden that has been placed upon you by events. I'm sorry. With that, I move the previous question.
Great. Commissioner Dickerson has moved the previous question. All commissioners in favor of Mr. Broussard serving as chair effective July 1st, say aye.
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 No opposed. The motion carries unanimously. Congratulations.
Mr. Chairman.
The chair now recognizes Commissioner Dickerson for a privilege.
Thank you. A point of personal privilege. As I've explained to people, you do have to tell the president first about these things. There are rules. But 4 years ago, the Senate confirmed my nomination to a term on this commission ending on April 30th, 2025. That day has arrived. Accordingly, I have informed the president of my resignation effective this evening. As is customary, I'd like to leave my colleagues with my thanks and a few thoughts. It's difficult to remember the commission we inherited in 2020. Years of entrenchment and recrimination had badly hobbled this organization. The enforcement backlog numbered in the hundreds of matters, many imperiled by the statute of limitations. Regulatory efforts had lain dormant for a decade or longer. The FEC was refusing to show up in federal court or even explain why. Meanwhile, basic efforts to acknowledge binding decisions of the Supreme Court went nowhere as long-serving commissioners played a delaying game rather than accept judicial losses. The commissioners had such difficulty agreeing on advisory opinions that the public largely stopped asking. I mention all of this for three reasons. First, to celebrate. The four of us serving today undertook quietly successful reforms that make 2020 feel like a distant memory. Under Commissioner Broussard's leadership, we cleared the enforcement backlog. Together, we passed a regulation that had been repeatedly debated and repeatedly shelved for 13 years. And then we passed another. The commission started showing up in court, both to enforce and to defend. We turned our backs on procedural gamesmanship and accepted public scrutiny and the fully informed judgment of the judiciary. And while I fervently wish we had gone further, including this morning, we took steps in the direction of good government and regular order, reforming our investigation procedures, collaborating with the State Department, updating our forms, the list goes on. Second, to warn. The FEC's mission is extraordinarily delicate. We regulate and limit political participation, a constitutionally dicey proposition made worse by muddled, highly technical rules. And we do it against an explicitly political backdrop. There is great temptation to take procedural shortcuts for short-term gain or to believe the stakes in this election are so high, and as always this election, that they justify departures from principle or tempt us to the more insidious errors that come from viewing the laws through partisan lenses. The commission we inherited did not fall apart overnight, and the commission we have built is not guaranteed to last. In a dark chapter, I remember asking one of our former colleagues, why? What was the justification for defaulting a federal agency? Hiding our votes, leaving everyone, including the public and respondents, on the hook and in the dark. The answer came back, because I'm tired of losing. However well-intentioned, that is the answer of the tyrant and the star chamber. It reflects a blinkered and self-aggrandizing view of this commission's role and our individual importance. It cannot be permitted to establish itself here ever again. Finally, I mention this history to thank you all. An organization is nothing more or less than its people, and everything worth doing is a team effort. We got from there to here together. So let me start with the Office of General Counsel, which labors under the supervision of commissioners who invariably are lawyers with strong personalities. I want to thank you all for your hard work and your courage and grace under fire. As I used to tell your litigators when I was on the other side of the table, you have a difficult client. I know our discussions have been pointed and stressful at times, and I hope that you understand in all sincerity that a hard discussion with me is an expression of confidence and a compliment. Let me leave you with two thoughts that have guided my view of the commission's enforcement role. Some of you may believe the problem is that the commission deadlocks too often and enforces too seldom. I urge you to remember that the sincere bipartisan nature of our enforcement decisions is why, when the commission does move forward, it does so credibly. Congress wisely created an agency that fails safe. There is no shortcut. The American people will not accept partisan enforcement of political rules, whether under the guise of good government litigation or supposedly nonpartisan experts. Persuasion, not gamesmanship, is the only practical way forward. Some of you may believe the problem is over-enforcement, that the commission itself is unconstitutional and the republic would be better off without it, or if it failed. I urge you to remember that the original sin of campaign finance regulation is vagueness, not overbreadth. Sincere bipartisan interpretation of the rules and a one-stop shop for answers is a powerful tool protecting political participation. That is why an evenly divided commission, led by a chair and vice chair elected in an orderly rotation, is crucial. There's no shortcut here either. Our legal efforts attract most of the attention in this hearing room, but it takes so many people to make this agency function, too many to name. But our meetings are not recorded, our buildings secured, our statements issued without the hard work of many people in this room and outside of it. But I do want to give special thanks to the Reports Analysis Division and to the Commission Secretary's Office, whose quiet competence creates little drama and too often goes unrecognized. Thank you. I also want to thank my staff over the past 4 years, Jenna Kirsch, Anna Mackin, Zach Morgan, and Allison Tuck. This is harder than I expected. I'm humbled by your confidence in following me. Sorry, the last time was my wedding. In following me to this agency. I'm grateful for your hard work and sincere counsel. And I look forward to the great things you're all going to accomplish. Ashley Stowe also deserves a special mention. I've met few people as broadly read, deeply committed, and quietly effective. Without fanfare or self-promotion, she's brought more good ideas to pass and stopped more bad ones in their tracks than most people realize. And I can't leave without thanking her publicly. Finally, my colleagues. It's been a privilege to serve alongside you. Whatever our disagreements, and some of them run very deep, I've always had great confidence in your hard work, conviction, and openness to dialogue. More importantly, I know that you love and believe in this country and have served her faithfully. Thank you for your confidence and friendship, and good luck. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner Dickerson. Commissioner,
just for anybody, the two people watching us online, please know that my colleagues are blubbering up here, and there are like actual tears, which I will be sure to say something that is not going to make anybody cry, I don't think. Certainly not me.
I'm not ashamed of my emotions.
Well, you know, maybe you need to repress them like I am.
No, never. Always feel what you feel, people.
So let me be honest, this speech is not going to be as articulate as I wanted it to be. And for that, I fully blame Commissioner Dickerson. He has kept me up late the last few nights, locked in deep discussion, trying to wrap things up true to form. So now let me say this, I very strongly disagree with Alan on a number of his positions, but I also deeply respect his position and more importantly, his willingness to engage, to discuss, and to really wrestle with ideas. Alan never avoided the hard conversations. He showed up and he made us think. When he first joined the agency, or when he first tried to join the agency, and was in the middle of his nomination and confirmation process, There were a lot of assumptions about who he would be, maybe a rigid ideologue, maybe a regulatory saboteur. But if you ever saw Allen actually at work, you would know that wasn't who he was. Oh, Jesus, could you? He was someone, this is something. He was someone who truly tried to make the agency function, to protect it, and to make it better, even if that meant making decisions that were, yes, controversial, especially because they actually came from him. One of the best examples of that is the investigations policy. That policy, largely shaped by through his negotiations with Commissioner Broussard and myself, ultimately strengthened our enforcement process and left a lasting mark on how we do our work. It was thoughtful, rigorous, and most of all, useful. Personally, Allen was one of the first to welcome me. He sent me his case memos, helped me understand the landscape, answered my questions quickly, and never once made me feel like I was asking something I should have already known. He was straightforward and he was helpful. And to this day, he's the guy I'll call when I'm at war with my HOA and need to remember some obscure legal procedure from a decade ago to save a tree swing that I've used fairly often while to relax while in deep debate with him. I will retain this tree swing in my continued appeals of my HOA. So thank you for your assistance in the matter. So while we may not have always agreed, I am grateful for Allen's service, his intellect, his commitment, and yes, even to those late in the debate. Thank you.
As I said, I've never had a problem with anyone having a sense of sharing what their emotions are, being more in touch with yourself, makes you a better person. So here are a few remarks that I would like to say. First, I want to say thank you for 4.5 years, but don't look. Don't look at me. I am known as a person who has an overwhelming empathy. So if I see one person emote, then I will emote as well. I bet you guys don't know that I'm a person of overwhelming. I don't feel like you know that, staff, and so I'm talking to you, not the public. Think what you want. I want to thank you for your service at the commission for 4.5 years. In that time, you've taught us so much about antiquities and ancient Greek literature. With quotes from the Iliad to Milton, you've helped us pass Classics 101. We worked together immediately as chair and vice chair, and that time can be summed up with a quote you may recognize: "Better to reign in hell than to serve in heaven." To let you all know that's Milton. If anyone, that is something that Commissioner Dickerson and I would routinely exchange quotes, very arcane quotes that nobody else cares about besides the two of us. Maybe one person in the audience that shook their head in recognition. Much has been accomplished, my colleague and friend. Much that has improved the efficiency of this agency's enforcement process, a love of procedure that we both share, but more so has been accomplished to the benefit of our regulated community. Together, we reached the finish line on a 13-year effort to draft final rules on internet disclaimers. And together, we helped expand the pool of candidates to the candidate salaries rulemaking. We have had many, many legal disagreements, and I suspect that will continue for some time to come. But what is most appreciated is the willingness on both sides to listen and see common ground. That, my colleague and friend, is a true definition of bipartisanship. I'm going to close with another quote that you may recognize and that I find fitting at this moment. This is from his favorite book. I know not all that may be coming, but be it what it will, I'll go to it lacking. I did not say that very well. That's from Moby Dick. Alan Dickerson is the only person that still loves that book after all this time. I read it in high school, and I banished it to the back of the shelf after that. But great literature is great literature. But as a quote from your favorite book, go forth laughing, and thank you for everything that you've done to me.
Thank you, Commissioner Broussard. Today marks the departure of a colleague whose impact on this commission and on the broader landscape of campaign finance law, which will be felt for years to come. Commissioner Allen Dickerson is concluding his service here at the FEC. While we wish him the very best in whatever comes next, his absence will certainly be felt. Allen is without question one of the finest campaign finance minds in the country. He brought to this commission not only a deep understanding of the law, but also a unique clarity of thought, a clarity that has shaped policy, guided our deliberations, and strengthened our role as stewards of an agency with a very precarious mission. Throughout his tenure, Commissioner Dickerson was an outstanding writer, a keen strategist, and when necessary, a tough negotiator, but always a fair one. His legal acumen was matched by tireless dedication, getting the job done right, and not to seek credit or accolades in the process. He never lost sight of the principles that guide our work for the people that we serve. Alan's approach to the law has always been both principled and practical, and his presence on this commission elevated the work of everyone around him. The American people were well served by his time in office, and I believe I speak for all of us when I say, I hope that we haven't seen the last of his service to our republic. Alan, thank you for your integrity, your intellect, and your unwavering commitment to public service. You will be greatly missed.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I just want to thank everyone for those very gracious words now that I've recovered myself, and I'm going to blame the Hawaiian background for the emotions. I also want to note that if anyone's trying to butter me up and thinks they're going to, I'm going to pull punches in future litigation, they are mistaken. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Without objection, any commissioner that wants to have their comments submitted for the minutes will be able to do so. With that, I will ask Mr. Staff Director, are there any minutes under administrative matters?
Mr. Acting Chairman, there are no such matters.
Thank you. This concludes the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for April 30th, 2025.